Thank you, Your Honor. If it please the court, I'm Marvin Miller for Mr. Davis. This case began when Holly Springs police officer Richardson stopped him for tinted windows on a street in town. The officer got his registration, etc., sat in his patrol car, which is a marked car. He was in uniform and was checking him out on the computer when Officer Billig and Boyd arrived in their marked Ford Explorer, and they were in uniform. They talked, they pulled in behind Richardson, had their emergency lights on. The computer check showed no outstanding warrants. It showed that 20 years ago, he had a possession with intent to distribute cocaine charge, and the year before that, a possession of marijuana charge. After about 3 minutes into the stop, the car takes off. Officer Richardson goes behind it in his Dodge Charger, and Billig and Boyd go behind Richardson in their Explorer. There's a high-speed chase through a neighborhood. It lasts for maybe a minute or two. I think Boyd said it lasted less than 2 minutes, whatever it was. The car ends up going between two houses, parking on the between them, cuts off the engine, gets out, and Davis runs down an embankment to a swampy area with Richardson behind him. Shortly after that, Boyd and Billig show up. And when Richardson is about 7 to 10 yards away from Boyd, he pulls out his service weapon and he says, "Stop right there." Now, Davis, a black man, knows when a officer's got his gun on you and he says, "Stop right there." That's not a quote, but whatever language he used, he stopped. He said, "Now you come back here." And he turned around and he came back. In his hand was the book bag or backpack that he had taken with him out of the car. He came back to where Officer Richardson told him to come. Officer Richardson said, "You drop the backpack." He dropped it exactly where the officer thought it ought to be and obeyed his order. He's at gunpoint. He says, "You go over there and lay down on your stomach, face down." He laid down exactly where the officer told him to, face down on his stomach. Richardson put handcuffs on him and said he was under arrest because he had been speeding, he had been reckless driving, he had been fleeing the scene, and those were the charges. When Boyd and Billig arrive, they go down to where Richardson is, and Boyd sees that Richardson's standing over Mr. Davis. Everything's fine. He has no concern for officer safety, so he leaves Billig and Richardson. He goes to check the thing that could be a danger to the police. And the danger to the police is whether or not the car has his parking brake engaged or is in park. He checks that, that's okay, he comes back down. When he comes back down to where the officers and Davis are, he sees that Richardson has the book bag in his hand. Now, Richardson said that after he had him down on the ground and handcuffed and everything, that he picked up the bag and looked in it to see whether or not there was a gun or anything in it. "Why'd you look for a gun?" "Well, I looked for a gun because he had a drug conviction 20 years ago. Now, it wasn't a conspiracy."
So let's talk law at this point.
Yes, sir.
Your contention is it didn't have the requisite legal authority to search the backpack.
That's correct.
And I take it you want us to rely on the Gantt case.
Yes, and yes, plus a little bit, if Your Honor, please. What happens is that after Schimmel, Robinson, and Chadwick, there's Belton. Belton is interpreted too widely by too many courts.
Let's talk law first. I got the facts. Right, so I want to know, what law are you relying upon here? I mean,
Gantt and Riley, we
have not gone fully in that direction. We declined to even address it in the Farabee case. And if we go with the holding of Gantt, the question is, you know, how limited is that holding in terms of, is it just, it didn't say it was unique to vehicles, or what does it hold? And how is it relevant to you here on this book?
I'll say how it's relevant. In Gantt, the Supreme Court said that courts have been going too far in allowing searches incident to an arrest under Belton, and they said that's not consistent with what we want, and they talked about Chadwick. When they had the Riley decision some years after Gantt, Gantt was, I think, in 08, and Riley was in 14, the court talked about the search incident to arrest trilogy of cases because that was the issue in Riley. And when they were talking about that, they talked about Chadwick and Gantt. Chadwick was a case that was raised by the district court in your decision in Lippman, and you overruled the reliance of the district court on Chadwick in that case by relying on Belton. And that was a case where a man was arrested on a drug sale. They took his shoulder bag. He was at gunpoint, and they searched the shoulder bag. And the decision of this court in Lippman was, okay, you can search the shoulder bag because Belton says so. When Gantt came down, it reined in that kind of Belton authorization. And it talked about the case in Chadwick, which Chadwick was interesting because it said that if personality, in that case, it was a trunk, it could be luggage, but personal things, which the police have in their control, are things which require a warrant to search. And in Lippman and in the related case of Porter, both 1984 from this court, the police had the items, but they had been, before the police had them, on the defendant. So the theory was, if you arrest a defendant, whatever he had in his hand or with him at the time of his arrest, you can search under Belton. Gantt says, no, that's not true. And that's not.
So let's be clear. Gantt, we got what, yes. Gantt is. We know what it is. And there have been is an opinion in which the 3rd, 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th circuits have applied Gantt in situations like this. Holding the police searches of a passenger compartment incident to an arrest are only reasonable if the arrestee is unsecured and within reaching distance of the compartment at the time of the search. So the question is, do we extend this to closed objects like this book bag? And because it did not specifically find that its rationale was unique to the vehicle context, as it did in terms of a separate opinion or something of that nature. So is this the same thing here? Are we dealing with a book bag as opposed to a compartment? And is our inquiry then as to whether it should be in an unsecured passenger within reaching distance of it? And then that leads us to the next question. If we do say, okay, he is secured, and as you said, he's down in handcuffs. We know that. We're down there, and he's got a gun on him. Then the question is this a search incident to the arrest exception for this warrant requirement?
Well, this is not a search incident to the arrest exception because of Chadwick, which had been abrogated, as you did in Lippman, by Belton. And Gantt says, and Riley says, that's no longer the case. And here's the situation. The theory behind all search incidents to an arrest is, one of the things is officer safety. So in Chadwick, when the police took control of the luggage, they had it and the defendant didn't. In this case, when Officer Richardson took control of the bag, he put it at the place where he chose to have it. And it can't be said that he put it in a place that made it dangerous to himself, because no reasonable officer is going to manufacture a dangerous circumstance for themselves. And he didn't. He put it where he thought it was safe. And that was his reasonable.
Did he say he put it where he thought it was safe, or did he testify that the book bag was within the wingspan of the defendant here?
He said, in response to a leading question, was it in his wingspan? He said yes. But the standard under Gantt, Chadwick, and related cases is whether or not it's reasonable. And it can't be said that an officer.
Did anybody ask him, did he say that he put it in a place that he felt was safe, like you just said?
No one asked him that question, but for an officer to have a reason.
So he never said that. It's a reasonable conclusion is your argument.
Well, we know that he had it put where he chose. That's undisputed. Because he had the man at gunpoint and he told him where to put it. So if you've got someone at gunpoint, you tell them, put it down right there. It's not reasonable to think that an officer is going to place it when he can place it anywhere he wants. Someplace.
He said put it down right there, or he said put it down?
He told him where to put it down when he came out of the mud. And he had his gun on him. He said, drop the bag. And he had dropped the bag. Then he said, you go over there and lay down, face down. And then he handcuffed him. It's like in Chadwick. Once the officers had the bag, it was under their control. There was no reason not to get a warrant. Once Officer Richardson had the bag, then there was no reason not to get a warrant. It has to be looked at in common sense terms that an officer, where he has him come out with the bag in his hand, and once he's out of the mud, then the officer decides where and when he wants him to put it down, because he's the man with a gun on Davis. And so that was the officer's decision. And one can't assume that an officer made a decision to make something unsafe for himself. It's just like police can't create exigent circumstances and then say, aha, we've created exigent circumstances, so we have an exigent circumstance that justifies our conduct. They can't do that. And there has to be a reasonable belief. Now, there's no reason to believe there's a weapon in the bag, and there's no because there's no weapon to do with anything, and it's a traffic stop. There's no reason to believe that there's evidence of reckless driving, evidence of speeding, evidence of fleeing in the bag, because that's driving behavior. So under those circumstances, you have to look at the practical realities of it. And an officer can't manufacture a situation where he says, I have an exigent circumstance for my safety, which is what a search incident to arrest is all about. You look at the decision, I would say, in Lippman in particular, where Chadwick, police have it, they control it, they can put it anywhere they want. Once they do that, they're not allowed to claim, aha, we have an exigent circumstance. And because Belton was used by this court in Lippman to overrule Chadwick, and because it's been pulled in by Gant, then it applies in the same circumstances, because it was applied to the bag in Lippman, and it would apply to the bag here, because that's how this court addressed the issue. And so Gant would now control. The other thing is that the court in Riley talked about the importance of Chadwick and made distinctions between it and circumstances like Gant. And if you look at the totality of the situation in practical terms, there's a limit to a search incident to arrest. It's not unfettered. Even under Schimmel, you can't go to everything that's in the room where the guy's arrested. He's arrested behind his desk in his office. On the far side of the office, there's a lateral file cabinet with three chairs in front of it. You can't search it because it's not accessible. And so an officer can't put the bag in an accessible place and then say, aha, look what I did. Now I get to search it. He can't create that circumstance when he's got total control because he has the man at gunpoint. That doesn't fit with the way the Supreme Court analyzed the situation in Riley. That was a cell phone, but they were looking at search incident to arrest and officer safety. I think I've gone over my time. That I'd like to reserve the remainder, if I may, please.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Mr. Rogers.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Rogers, you're muted, Mr. Rogers. Mr. Rogers, yes, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Joshua Rogers, and I represent the United States. And the case here is pretty straightforward. It's about a defendant who forfeited his Fourth Amendment rights, and it all comes down to control. He maintained immediate control of his backpack during the arrest, and he relinquished control of his vehicle when fleeing arrest.
How did he maintain control of his backpack during the arrest?
Black letter law in this circuit says that, and this is current, lawful arrest alone authorizes search of a person, area, or container. And we look at geography and temporality. So with geography. Okay.
All right, you're getting ready to tell me about how he maintained control?
Yes, Your Honor. So okay. With geography, what we look at is immediate control. That doesn't mean, is it in his hands? It means, is it within his ability to get to? So, and that's a fact-intensive inquiry. So the backpack in this case.
That's where my wingspan question came in to Mr. Miller, because the officer did testify that the book bag was within Mr. Davis's wingspan. However, Mr. Davis was also on his stomach and handcuffed. So how could he get to it when he was on his stomach and handcuffed? That severely limits your wingspan, I would think.
It may limit your wingspan, but this court and many other courts, including circuit courts, have stated handcuffs are not fail-safe. Handcuffs has, the Third Circuit has pointed out in Shakir, there are many instances in which officers have died because a defendant, or in this case, or a criminal, managed to break out of handcuffs and kill them. It's not as if because the handcuffs are on, it's the end of the inquiry. It's looking at the geography of it. It is right next to him. He only has handcuffs on, and the officer's in a situation where he's trying to frisk him at the same time.
So your point is that this individual was not secure at the time. And I want to make sure we have the facts down. He was handcuffed. He was face down on the ground. And the officer, wasn't he holding a gun over him at the time?
I don't believe that's clear from the record. It would be implied from what we see. If he said, I frisked him. I imagine it's difficult to frisk with one hand, but it's not entirely clear, but he does have a firearm.
I thought it was indicated he had drawn that firearm.
He did draw the firearm, but it's not entirely clear whether he'd put it back in his holster. We do know he's attempting to frisk him.
So we'll have to assume, Mr. Rogers, that he still had it drawn, since there's no evidence. There's evidence that he had it drawn, but no evidence that he had reholstered it, right?
If we assume that, I think that we still
would succeed. It's not assuming it. That's the evidence that it was drawn, and there's no evidence that he holstered it, correct?
Yes, and I would still say that the defendant was in immediate control of the container. And by that, again, it was next to him. He has handcuffs that are not fail-safe, and we have an officer who is trying to multitask in having this defendant who has, as the district court found, driven like a maniac. And has now decided to act peacefully. If you believe the way the defendant's argument is going, it wasn't peaceful. This is a 6-minute window that starts with tinted windows, and the next thing, it's him on the ground with this guy. 6 minutes after barreling through the defendant through these two homes in his vehicle. So I think that the way he's casting it as this sort of, it's peaceful, everything is calm now, he just got him on the ground. This is a serious situation. In part, the bag itself speaks volumes. The defendant has nearly driven off a cliff. And what does he do at that moment? He grabs the bag. He's got a presence of mind to grab the bag. And even when he turns around after he gets stopped in the mud, he's holding onto that bag. He doesn't let go of the bag. And the officer now has to ask himself, in the midst of all this, what's in the bag? And it's right there. We've got a guy who's only handcuffed, and as the defendant pointed out in his brief, he's a big guy. He's on his hands and his face, and the officer now is trying to frisk him and look in the bag. This was more of an
extension. So do we apply Gantt here in our analysis of this, or do we go back to the pre-Gantt situation with the United States versus Kearns?
Well, I think Gantt is actually helpful here. I mean, Gantt more addressed glove compartments, and we do have Fourth Circuit cases and other circuits that have actually addressed more of the backpack scenario. But if we look at Gantt, one thing that's evident there is that the defendant was locked up in the back of the car, the police car. There was no getting to the contraband in that case. So if we apply Gantt, it's only helpful. In fact, if we look at all the cases that have been cited, they're all helpful to this one because none of them are as extreme as this one. This is at the tip of the spear in this case.
So are you saying Gantt extends beyond vehicular searches?
I would say so, Your Honor, but even if it doesn't, there are plenty of circuit court
cases.
Well,
I want to make sure we establish at least your position on that, because that is one avenue which to proceed if we're going with the Gantt, and there are circuits who have held that, some maybe that did not, but I want to get your point of view in terms of which way are you saying how we should handle Gantt. Should it extend beyond vehicular searches?
I would say that Gantt is parallel. It's up to the court whether it chooses to, adopt Gantt for these purposes. But I would say, regardless, that Gantt, even though it seems like it's more geared toward that context and everything's discussed in the context of a glove compartment box, this is more in line with the cases like Shakir and Cook, Perdomo, that are specifically dealing with a backpack. So I would say that I wouldn't necessarily, depending on what the court means by extend, I think I would find parallels without saying Gantt exactly applies here. But even if it did,
Gantt relies upon the unsecured passenger, a person who's there, and the ability to be able to reach. That's where the wingspan stuff come in. You get in the current, we're dealing back with temporal consideration and geographical considerations. Gantt's a narrow consideration. So you look at this particular individual, which is where you were going, seems to me, and you contend he was not secured in much the same way as the Farabee case. Interesting to me in terms of someone who's handcuffed face down, potentially with a gun on him, is not secure. And even if he has a gun, it would seem to me, you say he could have rehosted. Why would you unsecure a person? Would you not consider that an individual has a gun pointed? Well, let me ask, is that secure? Is that sufficient to amount to a secured situation? Individuals handcuffed face down in an open field. Okay, so we're not dealing with a house situation where you got people all around, you can go alert others. Gun on him, is that secure?
I would say that it is not, and I would say that based on black letter law. And that is simply that we look at geography. Is he
capable? I want to hear this black letter law. Cite me where that is coming. Just don't have to give any specific, but tell me what you were relying on when you say black letter law.
Currents.
That is not. Well, that's the whole conundrum you got. Currents is a different case than Gantt. Current relied upon geographical and temporal consideration. Gantt narrowed us, went to the vehicular situation. You're saying we should extend Gantt to apply beyond the vehicular situation. And when we do, we're now talking about unsecured versus the ability and the ability to be able to reach. And here's this individual, we outside of current now, on the Gantt, and here's this individual on the ground, face down, handcuffed. I'm presuming, are the handcuffs behind him, or they're behind his back, right? Handcuffed behind his back, gun on him, or at least potentially have a gun. And you say he could have rehosted, but it doesn't seem to make sense if it's secured to put a gun on someone that you would unsecure a person, to do something else. You would keep them secured in that situation. Doesn't that seem to follow?
Well, the thing is, I think when we say, well, does Gantt apply? Does Currents apply? The Fourth Amendment, it's a cornucopia of cases that deal with all these finer points, and the courts have to look at
it
these.
It is, but we have to, as we begin to go through that cornucopia of cases, we like to begin to define and make the law a little clearer in terms of situations so we don't get into these vague areas. And here we have an opportunity to decide, does Gantt apply in the Fourth Circuit as it does in several other circuits? That's the only question I'm asking. And if it does, that gives us an analysis. If you say no, then we fall outside of it, and maybe we get into more of the incident to search type cases, current and others there. So
what I'm trying to say is that Gantt does not exist in a vacuum. The you know, third, seventh, ninth, eighth, this court have actually narrowed down a discussion in terms of Gantt that applies in this. And it's coming together in terms of the law. So no, I wouldn't apply Gantt in a vacuum, but I would apply it in light of the body of law, especially that's developing around containers. And going back to, you know, the geographical and the temporal aspects here, with temporality, you know, usually we're looking at had a half hour passed, 10 minutes. This was as substantially contemporaneous as you could get with the arrest. Davis was being arrested as this happened. So when you have the situation where the geography is, it is within my wingspan and it's happening while I'm, and it's there while I'm getting arrested, it's difficult to see how that doesn't satisfy currents. And then when we read that in the context of all the other circuits, including Farabee, it's difficult to imagine how that doesn't actually fall within the range of something that would be immediate control that's substantially contemporaneous.
Mr. Rogers, the problem you have is that in Farabee, the person was milling around, correct?
Correct.
And we all know what milling around is. He was walking around. This is not the case. See, would you also agree here that the only justification you have for going in the bag would be based on security of the officer, correct?
I would agree that that is a legitimate reason. Wouldn't
that be the only reason under these facts to go in the bag is for the security of the officer? Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. So that being the case, I can't think of anybody more secure that you're on your stomach, face down, manacled with your both hands behind you. A person is standing over you with a weapon, police officer. I mean, how could you be more secure than that? Now, you're right, he was not in a car like Gantt, but that's better than a car because I'm telling you, it is impossible to jump up. I mean, you try that. I mean, sort of be on your stomach with your hands behind you and jump up before a person with a gun standing over you could shoot you or do whatever. I mean, I suppose you could say he could kick the person or something like that, but the bag? If there's any insecurity, the insecurity would be in his body being able to roll or something like that, but to get to the bag before that officer could get to him?
Well, again, I go back to Farabee as a great quote from there about handcuffs. And it's the court stated, handcuffs are not fail-safe, and they do not instantly and completely eliminate all risk that the suspect will flee or do the officers harm.
You know why? Because he was milling around there. He was on his feet walking. Sure. If you have someone handcuffed with their handcuffs in front of them and they're walking around, certainly you could go up to a bag and run. You could get into a bag with both hands and shoot somebody. But that's not this case. This man is on his stomach with his handcuffs behind him with somebody standing over him with a gun.
Well, this harkens to Robinson case from the Supreme Court 1973 when it said the decision to search incident to arrest is, quote, necessarily a quick ad hoc judgment and does not require to be broken down in each instance into an analysis of each step of the search. And so I think what we're doing, all of us here in the ivory tower, we're looking down at this officer who has, again, just been in this heart-stopping situation. He has a defendant with a bag. He's frisking the person, and he turns to look and see if there's a weapon. Seemed like the most reasonable thing that he could do in that moment and not consider like, oh, okay, maybe I'll just take a look in the bag and see, and then I'll handcuff him. I mean, he's in a situation where you have someone who's extremely volatile. That's what has been proven by the defendant at this point. The most reasonable thing he can do is to make sure he's no more volatile than he's already appeared to be and willing to potentially run over teenagers with a car. And that's part of the record, actually.
Mr. Rogers, you're a very good advocate. I'll give you that. But there's no way you can say this is a case of exigency. My goodness, he's handcuffed. He's going to be arrested. Get a warrant to go into the bag. There's no exigency at all. None at all. I mean, for example, if you really believe that the bag was a problem, you stand over him, you could take, and I think that's what Mr. Miller was referencing to, he could have picked the bag up and pushed it further away from him. There's no exigency as to that. You're talking about a situation where it's more likely that he could get to the bag as fast as the other person could. That's not this case. I mean, that's why you have him. He's not going anywhere. As much as he drove, I know you've gone over it before, he drove, but now he's captured. Now he's subdued. And I can't understand why you say he's not secure, but I know you argue that. But there's no exigency. Just take it down there and get a warrant for it and go in it all you want. And there's plenty of time to do it. You agree with that? What would have rushed the officer from doing the process of putting him in the car and then getting a warrant for the bag? Nothing, correct? You agree?
No, I think that we're Monday morning quarterbacking when we didn't play.
I'm not Monday morning quarterbacking. I'm talking about common sense. Wait a minute. What would have stopped the police officer in these situations from, when they arrest him, take the evidence as they do, and then get a warrant to search the bag? You tell me. I'm not playing quarterback. You tell me. Facts.
We weren't there, and we don't know. We don't know what the defendant was doing with his legs. We don't know how much he was resisting.
Are you really arguing that we weren't there? Then we may as well not have convened today then. If you're saying that the hands of an appellate court is shortened because we weren't there.
I think so. I mean, I think you ought to
argue the facts. My question is this. What under these facts would have prevented the officer from taking the bag down and getting a warrant?
You know, of course, could he have done that? Certainly. But was he still justified by the analysis that the court has to look at, which is the geography and the temporality of what's happening? When we look at those facts, I mean, yes, there's an alternate theory, but that does of how it could have gone, but that doesn't necessarily mean.
None of those facts and common sense help you.
Under those facts, we
none
have.
None of those facts with common sense help you, because the common sense is he's on the ground, manacle his hand behind him, and a police officer standing over top of him, and other police is around. That's the common sense of the facts, but none of those help you, but go ahead.
Well, you know, frankly, when I first looked at the case, I thought, wow, he's got handcuffs on, until I went to the Shakir case from the Third Circuit and saw the string sight of officers who'd actually been killed as a result of the handcuffs not working like they ought to.
See, part of the confusion here is Gant is a United States Supreme Court case, isn't it?
It is.
And so when you go beyond that, you've got the Gant holding, and you told me Gant applies to searches beyond the vehicle. If that's so, then Gant applies here to the book bag. You don't go to the pre-Gant cases that are circuit court cases. Sure, you can find all other kind of analysis here, but Gant analyzed the vehicle in the context of whether the individual was secured and had the ability to reach. That's the wingspan stuff. You get into a confusion when you want to try to, well, Supreme Court said this, but there's some circuit courts that say there's other ways you can do geographical and temporality with it. That's confusing, because the Supreme Court didn't use those cases. They did not use a geographical and a temporal argument with regard to the vehicle case. So that's why I asked, and it seems to me, the first decision we've got to make, do we apply Gant in a situation beyond the vehicles? If the answer is yes, we apply Gant. We don't go and add to the Supreme Court's opinion in Gant temporal and geographical things from current, which is, I think it was Fourth Circuit case or other cases. We stick with the Supreme Court. But if you say no, it doesn't apply necessarily because it's not the vehicle. If that was a vehicular case, then we're back in the geographical. So that's why I asked, which direction are you going in with that? Because I don't think you can pull up every case that's ever dealt with searches from the circuits and add it to a Supreme Court case that's dealt with a situation that would fit here if you say that Supreme Court case applies outside the vehicle. That makes sense?
It does.
Okay.
But we have merging areas of law. There are different streams of Fourth Amendment law. I mean,
sure you do. And I'm not arguing that point with you. No, I agree. There are merging streams, but we are dealing with a Fourth Circuit, Fourth Amendment type search here. The Supreme Court in this recent case of Gant, somewhat recent, makes this pronouncement in terms of here you've got a vehicle and here an individual. The question, the inquiry is, can he get to these this other area of the vehicle? Is he secured? And is it in reach? The question I ask, well, if that applies, then you got this backpack. Is a backpack, you know, sort of like a vehicle there? And does the same inquiry apply? Is it secured and within reach? If GAN applies, we don't need, as you say, a cornopia, cornopia, whatever of cases out there to go and try to deal with every situation of how we used to analyze these things, because we it could have been done. The Supreme Court could have used, I assume, the Fourth Circuit case occurred and says we're going to follow that reasoning, but it chose the Gantt analysis. So that helps to make it cleaner, at least from my perspective. We either going to apply Gantt or we say, no, that doesn't apply outside the vehicle. Then we spend our time talking in the things you want to talk about. So I'll ask you again, does Gantt apply outside of the vehicle search?
It does. And it must be merged with other cases that actually look at containers.
Tell me
like
a
backpacks.
Case that tells you that. A Supreme Court case on point that deals with a search must be applied to other circuit cases.
Well, I'm more talking about, for example, this court recently looked at Farabee. It's not as if the court said Gantt applies, or Gantt doesn't.
It does. They declined to deal with it in Farabee, didn't they? I mean, didn't we decline to? I thought we declined to do it. Maybe let me double check, but I thought we declined. Yeah, this court in Farabee declined to decide whether the Supreme Court's holding in Gantt should apply to objects like backpacks. They didn't reach it, but assume that it would. So today I'm asking, what if we don't want to decline applying Gantt? We want to decide whether it applies in this circuit. That's a key question. And you got to help me. You see where I'm going with this? Because we could do like we're doing in Verba and just decline. Sometimes a court just doesn't want to deal with an issue. Well, we might want to deal with that. So, and you say we should apply it outside. So you've given us an answer, but once you've given us the answer, now you want us, well, what is the, we like the little saying, you want that cake and you want to be able to eat it too with some other stuff there. So I think, I'm not sure it follows that way. It seems to me, if you're going to go with Gantt, then Gantt is going to inform this decision by determining whether this individual was secured, which you argued he's not, which I thought was a Gantt. That was consistent with it. But then you want to go geographical and temporal parts from current, which is pre-Gantt.
And my answer to the question is, I'm not going to say that it Gantt must apply, but it can apply and be examined in the terms of other circuit court cases. I don't think that's
fair. That's a fair statement. But let me just put it this way. What you need to deal with is in the vein, when you say it can apply, if we say it does apply, where do you go there? That's the question. You're exactly right. It can. It could go either way. We could say no or yes. But I'm giving you the scenario. What if we say it does apply?
If it does apply, then we would be successful in that instance as well, because in that case, you have a clearly different scenario. You have a defendant who is definitely entitled to his Fourth Amendment rights, because officers are actually, you'd say in that case, claiming to have some sort of reason. They have to check the bag right
then.
In
what case? You say that case, what are you, which one you're talking about? You talking about the Gantt case or this case?
Yes, Your Honor.
Are you talking about which factual scenario you're talking about?
I'm talking about the fact that you have officers justifying their search
in this case,
in that bag in Gantt, despite the fact that the man is actually locked up in the back of a police car. So in this case, we could definitely distinguish. We don't have somebody who has at this point absolutely locked down. This is not somebody who's completely secure. I do understand, Chief Judge, that you disagree, but based on what we believe the law to be, is that he is not completely secure. Unlike
that's a lot clearer to me now. Now you are saying what you are saying is again applies, but he was not secure. And the question is, can we determine on these facts from out, if we say yes, he was secure because he had a gun on him, because he was on his stomach, because he's handcuffed in the back. You know, sometimes it's law, you know, I hate to say it, but sometimes facts lead to conclusions that we can disagree as to what those facts mean. Some people will look at that and says, that looks like it's secure to me. Courts have a way of looking at it, as you said, you could be in the back of a car, you can't, and so you're not secure. And it's interesting. What we're trying to do is be honest and be open and use some common sense in it. Once it's said, it becomes the law. Which is interesting. It does just become the law because the court said it. But you sometimes you look at it and you shake your head and says, wait a minute. Court says that's not secure. Sure looks like it's secure to me. So that's a good point to leave on that. I think you've clarified me, at least in terms of your position on it. And I think that's consistent with saying Gantt can apply, but you say, no, it doesn't apply because he wasn't secure. Okay, well,
I'm sorry, I just have to confirm because we're reviewing the district court. Did the district court ever make a finding that he was not secure or a finding that the backpack was in his immediate control?
The district court did not make that finding because this was not an argument that the defendant made. He made this argument for the first time on appeal. The arguments he made at the district court were that the stop was consensual and he was allowed to leave at that point and that he lawfully resisted arrest. So there wasn't.
The district court just said when defendant Howard Davis fled from the traffic stop, Officer Richardson observed him commit a multitude of crimes, including speeding to elude arrest and resisting an officer. Those observations provided probable cause to arrest defendant for those crimes. Okay, fine. And to search his person and items within his immediate control. The arrest and search of the defendant and his backpack were lawful. There's no finding at all of, or maybe there is somewhere else. If there is, show me.
I would look at JA. I'm not sure I got this. There aren't page numbers, unfortunately. 151. Yes. The last paragraph at the bottom, the court says, once the officer conducts such an arrest, search incident to the arrest, including a search of the person and any containers or other materials, such as a backpack, within his immediate control, fall within the exception to the warrant requirement to the Fourth Amendment. And so I would say that the court-
Right, but the court didn't conclude that the backpack was within his immediate control. Nor did the court conclude, the district court conclude that he was not secure. Even what you just read, and I don't see it on JA 151, but I'm sure it's somewhere because you read it. I understand that the court said what the law was, or what the court, district court deemed the law to be, but in terms of our review of what the court found, I just don't see that the court found that this backpack was within his immediate control or that he was not secure. And I assume we could conclude, though, from the district court's denial of the motion to suppress and his recitation of that law that that's what the district court concluded. But I just didn't see it anywhere. And I've taken up enough time.
All right. Thank you, Mr.
I got one question I want to ask for leaving, and don't assume anything from that I'm forecasting anything on this, but I do want to know the answer. If we were to find that the search of the backpack was unlawful, what would be the evidence that would give probable cause for the search of the vehicle? Probable cause to believe that a contraband or evidence of crime was located in the vehicle. What evidence are you relying on for that? Now, you got the first part of the question because I don't want to, I know that makes you uncomfortable with me to go there, but I'm just assume that's the case. Then can we still find there was probable cause to search that vehicle? That's my question.
Absolutely. The defendant abandoned the vehicle. And when someone has abandoned the vehicle,
Now, then, wait, you a minute ago, you just faulted opposing counsel for not making an argument below. You didn't make this argument below, did you? This came in a J letter that opposing counsel was correct, was not an appropriate use of a Rule 28J letter because you didn't cite any new cases. You cited a new argument. Is there somewhere that you argued this abandonment of vehicle below?
There is not.
Okay.
But still, anything beyond the abandonment argument then? Because if we hold to that, that would follow what Judge Thacker said. But you know, there are facts that would support the probable cause to search this vehicle beyond the backpack.
Then the question in that case is, was it reasonable to think evidence was in the vehicle? And the answer to that would be yes. Without going through the entire 6-minute debacle, the defendant showed many signs that there was something worth looking at in the car. When we saw that there were drug convictions, it appeared that he was perhaps under supervision. He was definitely on a watch list, and he barreled through an area to get away from the officers and maintains this backpack. Let's assume they didn't look in there, but he maintains this backpack that he won't let go of at this point. I would say on that point, the officers, it was reasonable to think that there was relevant evidence in there. And if Thank there you. Are no further questions, I would just ask the court to affirm the district court.
Thank you, Mr. Thank Rogers. You. Appreciate it. Mr. Miller, you have some time reserved.
Thank you, if the court please.
Mr. Miller, yes, before sir. You begin, I want you to answer that last question for me because, you know, we've gone round and around, but I want you to answer that question. And that is, if we were to agree that the search of the backpack was unlawful, why is it not that the evidence of past drug activity and fleeing from a traffic stop are not enough to support probable cause to believe that there was drug contraband in that car?
A couple of reasons, if Your Honor, please. First of all, the arrest was for traffic violations, speeding to elude and fleeing. A 20-year-old possession with intent to distribute drug case does not create probable cause or even reasonable suspicion to think that the person has drugs on them at the time. The possession of marijuana, which was 21 years old, doesn't do that either.
So you're saying it's the age of the drug charges, okay, but it's some past drug activity. Couple that I'm with, but you're saying because you did flee the traffic stop. I mean, that shows something is there. There's some reason you're doing it, but you're saying that's too tenuous and not connected temporally enough to allow for probable cause to be found.
There's another factor with that prior charge. It's not a conspiracy charge where he's part of a group that is involved in dealing drugs over a period of time.
Don't confuse me. I don't want to go there. I know it's not a conspiracy charge. No, I just want to deal with these facts here that are on the table. The past drug activity and your criticism there is that it's too old. It's a long time ago. And old convictions with fleeing wouldn't be the same if you had some new ones with the fleeing. That would give you probable cause more likely.
That's
is that
correct.
Your argument?
There are two parts to the argument. One is the age and two is the type of charge. Because it's a single individual in possession of drugs in a traffic stop 20 years ago doesn't mean that they were part of anything that would be ongoing now. So it's the type of charge and the age in combination don't give any reasonable basis.
I want you to move on to the next point because I think I got your point. He stopped for tenant windows. That has nothing to do with drugs. There's no indication he's got drugs up there, but he's got these. The way you get the drugs is the old convictions. Then he runs. And you can be running for any reason, but I don't know. But you can move to the next. I think I've got your answer on that.
he told Officer Richardson, as he's coming out at gunpoint, I'm sorry, I apologize, I panicked. I just panicked, and he ran. And there are people who jackrabbit for no reason. You find it in DWI cases.
So let me move to the other point, because you're going to lose some time in a minute. If we take Gant, if we take Gant and say, okay, Gant applies outside of search, the big contention on from the government's perspective is he's not secure. What makes him secure? And we've been round around on that, and it may just ultimately come down. Somebody got to make a call as to whether, as a matter of law, that's secure or not. But other than the fact that he's handcuffed, he's face down, potentially has a gun drawn on him. And there have been instances, even with the cases in which he's standing outside handcuffed, he can run back in the house. That sounds like it's kind of tenuous to me, but they are there. And he's pointed to facts in the Gantt case in terms of what's secure and what's not. What makes this a really case we can say as a matter of law, he's secure?
Well, you have to look at the officer's actions, because actions speak louder than words. When Boyd and Velick, because at 209 of the joint appendix, Boyd says he and Velick ran together to where Richardson had Davis. He says that Davis was down on the ground, on his stomach, face down, handcuffed. Officer Boyd saw that situation, and in his police professional training, he was secure because he was, as he said, standing over him. And you don't holster your gun until you're safe. So,
well, that gives us something to kind of go along. We're not going to say that because the officer thought he wasn't the guy securing him. It was the other one.
But Officer Boyd took action to protect officer safety. And the action that he took to protect officer safety wasn't to go down and be another guy on Richardson. It was to go check the car, because his first duty is officer safety. The other thing is that Officer Richardson, who has a duty to officer safety to himself, decided where the bag was going to be put and put it there. And he had the man under control. You cannot jump up face down on the ground. If you weigh 235 pounds, you're only 5'11" and you're pudgy as he appears in his photographs.
This is where the law sort of gets into a point where you begin to wonder who makes these laws, because what all this means is if he had come out of that swamp and chunked that bag away from him, we wouldn't be having this discussion right now, would we? Because he can't get to it. I mean, it almost makes the law absurd, that someone who throws a bag can get a benefit. But if you just, instead of throwing something, just drop it beside it, it's a different result that can happen.
There's a difference here. And the difference here is...
But that is true, what I just said, right?
Yes, that is true. And in this case, the distinction from that hypothetical is that he didn't just drop it. When he's told, you stop right there at gunpoint, and he doesn't want to get shot, and he turns around, and he does exactly what he's told by the man who's got the loaded gun on him, and he comes out, and then when the man with the loaded gun says, okay, now, drop the bag.
Yes, you know, sir. What you don't argue here that would be interesting is, why would you have said, he had that bag the whole time. He never went into it. He could have gone into it many times, but once he dropped the bag, he had no intention to go into the bag. I mean, I haven't heard you say that, but why doesn't that make sense? That someone, it's not like you getting out of the car and then all of a sudden you decide, I'm going to turn the car loose. The car's there. But if you're going to apply Gantt, he has that bag the whole time he's running. He's in the swamp with it. He comes out with it. If there is something in that bag he wants to access for safety, most people would do it before the police get there, and not waiting to drop it on the side and then try to reach for it. That doesn't seem to make any sense at all.
You're correct. He didn't go into the bag. There are cases where they don't reach August court, where somebody's running and they pull a gun out of their waistband or out of a bag and turn around and try and shoot at the police, and then the police get them. Sometimes officers get wounded.
I think it's just absurd. I think the whole law here, just there's a lot of absurdities, but the aim is all the same. And maybe we can make rules that will make rules should make sense and make them. Maybe there's a common sense situation here, but the court has gotten us into this whole business of Gantt. We've gotten into the current cases of temporal and we're trying to look at all the factors involved. And maybe I don't know. I got a feeling one day the Supreme Court is going to put us in much more of what Mr. Rogers has called that black letter law. I think that black letter law is going to come one day and probably take us out of these scenarios. But you got it. This is a conundrum we're in. So I'm good with my questions. If others might want to go.
May I wrap this with one final piece, if the court please?
Yes, you may.
Thank you. And that is that the idea is safety. If the idea is safety, then police don't create unsafe situations for themselves. They don't manufacture exigent circumstances. Either the law doesn't allow that. And when an officer sees another officer and they're going there to make sure everything's okay and they see things are safe, then they do what their job requires them to do to keep the police safe. In this case, it was go back and check the car. And there, instead of three officers, there were two. The whole principle behind all of this law is that there has to be reason and fairness and that warrants are preferred. And you have to look at what the police did. They did what their training taught them to do so that they were safe and they had no legitimate concern about the bag. They had no factual basis for it. It's not Farabee running around loose, destroying evidence, and just doing what he feels like. Here's a man that's immobile at gunpoint. There end up being three officers, and the bag is where the officers think it's safe to be. So under those circumstances, since you applied Gantt to non-vehicle cases and Porter and Littman, you can apply it here. It's consistent with your work. Final piece is Shakir, Third Circuit case cited in Farabee, talks about the case of, or was it Cursor? I think it is, being one where this court, as many others, had used Belton to go beyond what would be reasonable. And just because he had it at one time doesn't mean that they can search that personality without a warrant. I think Chadwick makes that clear. Thank you very much. I appreciate your time and your courtesy.
Thank you. Mr. Miller. Thank you, Mr. Rogers, for your argument. Appreciate it very much. Thank you. Can't come down and shake your hand, but know that we appreciate very much your argument. And wish and pray that you'll be safe and well. Thank you,
Your Honor.
With that, I'll ask the clerk to adjourn the court.
This honorable court stands adjourned until this afternoon. God save the United States and this honorable court.